Greetings, everybody. I'm going to call us into a meeting, and we're waiting on a couple of senators. They should be along shortly. In the process, I'm going to take just a minute and let Mr. Bender kind of go over what our work plan is going to be for this subcommittee over the next couple of weeks, and we can get that out of the way, and I don't want to hold the treasurer up long, so we'll move quickly into that. Okay? Steve?
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair and members. Welcome to your first meeting of the 2012 legislative session. What we've distributed to you is a subcommittee work plan or schedule to let you know what the plan is and what types of issues you'll be addressing during this legislative session. It's in calendar format, and we are planning at least four meetings of this subcommittee during this February session, plus probably at least one more meeting, but we are putting everything that we already have had assigned to the subcommittee by the full committee co-chairs onto the schedule for the first four meetings to allow you to work through that in that amount of time. You can see that we're meeting on Tuesdays and Thursdays. There are a number of issues here. The issues that are being brought forward to the subcommittee are basically fall into three categories. One category is items that will reflect adjustments to agency budgets. You don't have any of those on today's agenda, but, for example, you will have one on Thursday. The Department of Consumer and Business Services is requesting an increase in their budget. These types of items will follow the following process during this legislative session. You will consider the items, and you will make a recommendation, and the recommendation that you make will be included in the budget reconciliation bill that is being prepared for this legislative session. The thing that to note is that unlike during a odd-year numbered session, the measure does not go forward to full Ways and Means as a separate item. But in this case, the subcommittees are considering all these items. They will be put into a budget reconciliation bill. Those of you who are in full committee will then consider them again at that point. And, of course, the whole body will then consider these bills when they come forward for a vote to the two chambers. A second type of item that you will be receiving or hearing, working on during this session will be reports that require some type of action on your part. These are typically reports that were designated or required by either statute or budget note, and the actions that you would take would be to acknowledge that the agency has fulfilled its obligations and indeed prepared and submitted an acceptable report as is required or as you have required. The third, and in these particular items, these will go to the full committee, the full Ways and Means Committee. So one of the items that you have on today's schedule, the Department of Aviation, is responding to a budget note and preparing and asking you to accept a report. So your recommendation will then go to the full committee, which will take action on that as to whether to formally acknowledge that report or not. The third category of items are other reports that have not been specifically required, and in these cases, generally, you'll just receive the report, but you won't have to necessarily take a vote or any action on that. The next item on your agenda today, or the first item on your agenda today, a report from the State Treasurer falls into this third category. The State Treasurer is here to report on a grant that he has been awarded from the Rockefeller Foundation that will be used to design and launch a West Coast infrastructure exchange. The Treasurer does have a request for a budget adjustment relating to this particular grant. That request, though, will be considered by your colleagues in the General Government Subcommittee who work on the Treasurer's budget, have that within their purview. However, at the request of the subcommittee co-chairs of this subcommittee, the Treasurer has agreed to present this particular item to you as a report so that you can be aware of the various activities that he is hoping to be able to accomplish with these grant funds.
One, if I could back up just a bit, one question. Your report left out any opportunity that this subcommittee might be getting any bills, Ways and Means referred bills to this subcommittee. At this point, are we assuming that we will not have foreclosure bills or something that, you know, kind of like we did last session that got referred to this committee?
You're right. I left that out, and that was a big thing I left out. I put, if you look at the calendar that I put on there, I do have bills in parentheses or brackets for the 21st. You may be assigned bills.
Okay, I thought so, you were trying to subtly
me that I didn't, that was an omission, and I'm sorry to give you that impression. But the full committee co-chairs, as they do during any session, will have the authority to assign bills to various subcommittees for the consideration of Ways and Means. And it's our understanding that bills that do have subsequent referrals to Ways and Means may be assigned to the various subcommittees, including this one.
Okay, great. I'm going to officially open an informational hearing on the Treasury report on the grant from the Rockefeller Foundation. So, Treasurer Wheeler, Tom, whoever wants to come up, and I appreciate you guys showing up. I think things may have gotten a little turned around from what Co-Chair Reed and I, we kind of assumed, I think, unless I was mistaken, that you would probably appear before the general government first and go through that formality of actually receiving the money and whatnot, and then hopefully you would be assigned then to this subcommittee on an ongoing basis to actually get updates on the infrastructure reports and how that was working. But that part's immaterial. I just wanted to get that on the record. We're glad to see you. So take it away.
Thank you. Thank you, Co-Chairs Huffman and Reed and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ted Wheeler, State Treasurer. I come with what I hope is good news. As Representative Huffman indicated, we've been awarded a grant by the Rockefeller Foundation for $250,000. It is being granted to us in collaboration with the states of Washington and California for the purpose of researching new and more effective ways to facilitate infrastructure investment in particular. As you're certainly all aware, Oregon's 20-year infrastructure needs are immense when you combine together the state of Oregon, the state of Washington, and the state of California's 20-year infrastructure needs. It's estimated to exceed $1 trillion. When we discovered interest amongst our colleagues in having a more collaborative discussion about potential responses to this issue, the governor agreed to host leaders from all three states in his office back on November 9th. We began the discussion. There was such momentum at the end of that particular meeting that the discussion continued in December at the National Association of State Treasurers, where this caught the attention of the Rockefeller Foundation with a process that I would describe as very rare in terms of its speed. A total of 3 weeks went by between the time we started having this conversation with the Rockefeller Foundation and we received approval from the Rockefeller Foundation for the grant request. Tom Reinhart, my chief of staff, is here, and he's going to tell you a little bit about what this grant will be used for, and then we'll do our very level best to answer any questions you might have as a result.
Thank you.
Thank you, Treasurer Wheeler, co-chairs, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tom Reinhart. I'm chief of staff at the State Treasury. What the grant does, and my role here today is to give you kind of a sense of what the grant is for and what we hope to accomplish. It basically funds a couple different stages of work. The first is a consultant to do a strategic plan for us to try to figure out answers to basic questions that all states are asking about what we could do on infrastructure investing. The first major item on that is we are all making assumptions that the municipal financing market, the bond market, is different than it was over the past 30 years. That means we're not going to be able to issue as much debt. Local jurisdictions in particular are going to be constrained by which projects they can get approved. And we want more clear research on what that's going to mean in terms of projects in each of the three states. Secondly, we're asking a consultant to come up with what in our world are called term sheets and what could be done with common term sheets across each state. A term sheet in this example means any set of terms that we are asking for private firms to come forward with to fulfill before we look at investing in their products via the state pension plan or other entities. We think that we also need a lot of advice on the potential for technical assistance for state and local governments. I'm sure that some of the representatives and senators on this body have heard the same thing that Treasurer Wheeler hears when he travels the state. That is, we have a lot of projects between $10 and $25 million in local communities that aren't going to get funded. Water treatment centers, sewage plants, all sorts of necessary infrastructure. And we would like a plan for how we could bring expertise that we know from around the world via pension plans that could help local jurisdictions with these new and innovative ways to fund infrastructure. Secondly, we're looking for a manager, a second part of the...
These aren't like the crummy mics we have at Multnomah County. These are good ones. They're very
you were a little hot.
It's good when we bring the state treasurer. He really knows about how to work the microphone. We're also looking for, this part of this grant is to find a manager to help us build the collaboration. It's a lot of work, as you can imagine. You can imagine just bringing your colleagues together is a lot of work. When we're wrestling the treasurers and the governors and staffs from three states, it's been a lot of work. And now we have multiple states that are calling us that want to be involved. Iowa, North Carolina, Connecticut, for example, all want to be involved in this effort. So part of this grant will help fund a person that helps us envision a nonprofit entity and starts to pull people together. Lastly, the grant supports gatherings of policymakers, practitioners, fund managers, other experts as we build the collaboration, because the Rockefeller Foundation is particularly interested in how this could be a model. I'm sure that all of you are aware that this has been a conversation that has not moved much in Washington, D.C., about how we could look at infrastructure differently. So the foundation's interest is also how do we build the collaboration and show if something can be done collaboratively among states. Maybe it's a model. We're a long way from that. I want to close by saying a big thank you to Dan Carroll from the governor's staff, who has also been instrumental in this effort. You might want to talk to Dan at some point, too. And we look forward to working through this committee if and when we come up with actions that we think the legislature should take. I want to emphasize that we have a long way to go before that. We're really at the research stage, but we are hopeful and love to take any questions that you have.
Thank you. Questions? Senator Johnson wants to know what the heck we're talking about.
Oh, no, Mr. Chair, respectfully, I know exactly what you're talking about. I apologize. I had to testify on another bill.
Were you successful?
It was a memorial, so it was a little difficult.
Representative Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wonder if you could say a little bit more, and recognize it's very premature at this point, but a little bit more about the nonprofit entity that you mentioned, what that might look like.
Yes. Grant, with the caveat that we're still very early, but when we had on the initial gathering that Governor Kitzhaber pulled together in his office in November, the conversation really focused on it's extremely difficult with the different governing bodies of the pension plans. Now, for example, we have the Oregon Investment Council, which is gubernatorial appointees and the treasurer. California has two different plans and their own governing structure. Washington has the Washington State Investment Board, which is much different than the Investment Council. They all have their different policies and procedures. We don't believe that a governmental entity that's not separate from these three governments will be successful in working independent. We need an independent entity to really work through this, is what our belief is. That one, it cannot be housed in any of the three states or potentially more states if it works. That it needs to have some arm's length distance in its own structure to be successful. So unless we learn differently, that's what we're going to be shooting for. But again, we've asked a consultant to weigh in on that and tell us what she or he thinks is the best thing to do.
Other questions, thoughts, comments? Senator Starr.
Thank you. Well, this is the first that I've seen this. Maybe it's come across my desk and I just haven't focused on it yet. When you start talking about infrastructure, it's a large and complex term that incorporates a lot of different moving parts. Some of those moving parts have built-in funding streams that are relatively easy to maneuver. And I'm speaking primarily of water and sewer. You've got municipalities that govern and oversee those particular pieces of infrastructure, the ability to assess ratepayers and the taxpayers based on usage is relatively easy. For the most part, you can have local governing boards that can look into the future and engage in the needs of their local community and assess the ratepayers. and through revenue bonds have the ability to invest appropriately for the future. My concern, and it's not particularly related to this specific request, is where you have local governments that are thoughtful, forward-looking, conservative, who ultimately are going to potentially be asked to cover municipalities and local governments who are less so. And you know, I would just put that on the record that as we look at opportunities to address a very real problem, that we do it in a way that recognizes folks that are being responsible and doesn't lay on them a burden for folks that are not responsible. Likewise, when you talk about infrastructure, you also bring in roads, bridges, highways, and that particular piece of this infrastructure is where policymakers, for the most part, have had a difficult time addressing long-term funding needs. And because you just have less opportunity to assess the ratepayers or the users, the actual cost to the system. And again, in that situation, I think we just need to be really, really careful and cautious about how we go forward. Now, if this particular initiative, and as I've looked over this, it does appear to, when you use the word infrastructure, use it in the broadest term possible as I read this. So, I'm interested in all sorts of solutions, and if this is a potential solution to addressing our long-term infrastructure needs, more power to us. There's already a lot of information available. And there's a lot of places around the world that are addressing their infrastructure needs through the use of the private sector. And, somehow in this state, perhaps on the West Coast, using the word private, those two words together, private sector, to accomplish public good somehow is less appealing for some reason. But I would hope that as this goes forward that understanding the availability of private sector expertise and private sector dollars to address these long-term problems, hopefully, this effort potentially will move us in that direction. So, for the record, those are kind of some of the thoughts that I have as I looked at this.
Representative Reed.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. What could you share about the foundation's interest in ongoing? Is this sort of a good luck and fly on your own, or do you have expectations that there's more opportunity for collaboration?
Representative Reed, co-chairs, thanks for the question. We were in the 3 weeks that we had in terms of turning around the proposal, I was responsible for asking those questions, and it's clear to us that one of the reasons that we were so successful in such a short period of time is they'd had other failed conversations with other groups, I wouldn't say states, that held promise about infrastructure and that they have a long-term interest in the policy changes that experiments like this could bring. So I would say, to answer your question, they want to help us fund multiple years of this if we show some results and we can show that the three states and more will work well together. Rockefeller has also showed interest in bringing other foundation partners into it. So we're hopeful, but we're going to see how it goes.
One last question, Mr. Chair.
Follow up?
I think the co-chair did a good job of explaining why the three co-chairs and hopefully the rest of the committee members are interested in having you talk to us. Our hope, I think, is that, of course, there will be a success and you'll be coming back to tell us how we can better use the state's resources for infrastructure. What advice would you have for this committee to do to be prepared to be thoughtfully considering what might come as far as recommendations?
So, thank you, Representative Reed, co-chairs. The first piece of advice is keep expectations realistic. Senator Starr, I think, laid out some very real life examples of how this gets complicated very quickly. The various states and the foundations understand that this is a withering need, but that it's very complex.
It is not my expectation that we will come back to you in the very near term with a complete solution. This is, as Tom pointed out, the very beginning of what's probably going to be, I will describe amicably, as a robust research opportunity for all of us. From the perspective of the state treasuries that have been involved in this, we started with the recognition that there is regionally significant infrastructure that we could be investing in. We also started from the realization that all of us are fiduciaries for large pension plans that currently make significant investments worldwide in infrastructure. Then we also realized that from the perspective of our private sector investors in those infrastructure projects, the information is inconsistent. The term sheets that Tom referred to aren't standardized from state to state and even project to project. So part of this was, how do you standardize? How do you collaborate amongst states that have similar views with regard to infrastructure investment? How do you get better information to the market and the private sector investors in infrastructure programs? And not insignificantly, how do you collect the information about how to do this right? And that's sort of the goal of this nonprofit, is collecting and disseminating information on the best way to lever infrastructure projects. And then finally, the question that Senator Starr, I think, also touched upon was, for some of these projects at the local level that are really too small to be of interest to the players that we deal with our large global pension plans, is there a way, if we standardize, is it possible, and this is a big question mark, is it possible to bundle some of these smaller local projects into a larger pool of investable grade infrastructure projects that then our global investment partners in the private sector would have an interest? But it's a long way from where we are today to any possible solution, if there is one, down the road in terms of how we could do that. So that's a long way of saying we're excited about these first steps that we're taking, but we really don't want people to leave with the impression that we're anywhere near a solution to addressing our regional infrastructure needs. This is just the beginning. Is that a
that's fair, Mr.
fair admonition?
Yes. Senator Johnson.
Thank you. I thought I understood this perfectly, and I wasn't going to have any questions, but a comment that the Treasurer just made has caused one to come into my mind.
Ability to do that.
When you talk about regionally significant infrastructure, I think for some of us the definitional issues are going to matter a great deal. When we come into this building, for some of us, regionally significant infrastructure, for me, is Senate District 16. For Representative Witt, is House District 31. How do we get a broad understanding about how do you define regionally significant infrastructure, and how do you help the legislature get past our parochial view of regionally significant? I think there's a certain discipline that maybe is missing in this building in terms of identifying in some objective, quantifiable way what those projects are, what's their order in the queue, how do we maintain the discipline to keep that order. Obviously, if we're investing, and particularly investing in the kind of more global, for lack of a better word, arena that you talk about, the market will impose some of that discipline. But to get to the definitions, having the not-for-profit struggle with that in a public way that brings a level of comfort to legislators as well as the public, I think is going to be a challenge. And I'd like to hear your thoughts on how you're going to marshal that.
Senator Johnson, co-chairs, thanks for the question. I think that's a better beginning to the answer that I should have given Representative Reed on the need for the nonprofit. Our colleagues in California were particularly adamant about that, that some of these debates on terms of regionally significant projects, they have a much different governance structure that allows for much more pressure to be applied on their investment decisions. So they were very clear on the nonprofit entity helps to define things, set rules of the game, prioritize, maybe even have some social impact metrics that, frankly, the Investment Council and others, by their fiduciary duty, are not allowed to enter into in terms of investing. So it gives us a different set of really tools in the toolkit around the infrastructure discussion. I think everyone agrees that, if as we envision it, could be very useful.
Follow-up? But I also think that there's a special obligation on the not-for-profit to be transparent. I recall with a great deal of annoyance being told by the Energy Trust of Oregon that they only needed to follow the spirit of the law, not the letter of the law, in terms of open meeting. When people, including myself, made inquiries about the ROI on some of the projects that they were funding, we were told that was none of our business, and the shield of the private 501c3 was thrown over any disclosure of information. And I think that given the very nature of your work, you're going to be subject to some public inquiry. And I would very much like to build on the record right now your willingness to make this a transparent process so that we're not doing the same bad behavior that I think the Energy Trust exhibited, which is shielding much of their deliberative process under a cloak of secrecy.
Thank you, Senator and co-chairs. We're a long way from even defining what that nonprofit entity might look like. And certainly the scope of this particular research project does not allow us to create it. It's really fact-finding, it's research, it's analysis, it's lots of discussions with our other state partners to talk about what the needs are and what some of the roadblocks to collaborative infrastructure investing are. Before we ever did anything as a state or the Oregon Investment Council as fiduciaries entered into any agreements, there would have to be many more specifics put out there. And Senator, I completely agree with you and would doubly underscore the comments you made around transparency and accountability. Part of the issue that we've identified amongst our various state partners is the lack of consistency in how we report out information about these various deals and their structures. And so part of the investigative question, and it's very much an open question, is whether or not there is an opportunity for standardization of the term sheets across state lines. And I don't want to prejudge whether that's even feasible. The good news is that the Rockefeller Foundation is willing to step forward with their dollars to help support the research effort because they believe it is worth it to at least begin the investigatory process.
Thank you.
Looks like that's it. Gentlemen, thank you very much. Appreciate
the
report.
Thank you.
Thanks for having
me. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Best of luck.
Thanks for your time.
I'm going to close the informational hearing from the treasurer on the Rockefeller Foundation grant. And I would like to welcome all of our visitors that are joining us today. Is it League of Women Voters? Welcome. Thanks for coming in. And I didn't see too many of you nod off during all that. So you kept you engaged. And okay, I'm going to open up a work session for the Oregon Department of Aviation Quarterly Operations Report. Director Swicker, if you want to come forward, and Ms. Jordan, if you want to kind of tee us up here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. The Department of Aviation is bringing forth their third quarterly report on the operations of the agency as required by the budget note. So,
Mitch,
hand it off.
Go right ahead.
Well, Chair Huffman, members of the committee, thanks again for the opportunity to present our quarterly report. For the record, my name is Mitch Swecker, the director of the Department of Aviation. Our requirement here is to answer five questions on a regular basis. The first question, of course, is how we achieve our mission with a smaller organization since we went from 17 to 11 and a half. And I am happy to report that we have completed our transition to ODOT for our central services and administrative functions. There are a couple of things that are just finishing up, a couple of projects that are still with DAS, and we have a couple of leases that we need to wrap up and get transitioned over, but our transition for all practical purposes is complete. I'd like to say that we got great cooperation out of both DAS and ODOT for that. Matt Garrett, Clyde Psyche, and Joanna Robert were excellent at helping make this transition go smoothly and easily. The second question is, how does the organization resolve its issues raised in the audit report of May of 2010? And I can tell you that most of that is now complete. The one thing that we need to focus our attention on a little bit more is rulemaking, now that we've completed our transition to ODOT for administrative services. So rulemaking is an area we'll focus on probably for the next report. How the organization will address the issue of registering pilots and aircraft, Revenue is still down a little bit over previous years for both pilot and aircraft registration. Last biennium, we were down slightly in pilot registration. This time, we're down just slightly in both pilot and aircraft registration. And I actually did a pie chart that's part of your attachment there. I think it's attachment 3 that outlines the reasons for the pilot registration. And it's a number of reasons, but I'd say if you looked at an overall reason, it's largely economic. The fourth question is, what actions will the organization take to improve leadership and consistent application of policies and practices? The board continues to be engaged, as we've reported in previous reports, and we have made sure that we are engaged with the governor's transportation advisor and also participating in the non-highway transportation working group, and in making sure we're aligned with the governor's policies on his 10-year plan. And then the last thing that I would say is the financial conditions of our major programs, I'm happy to report, are stable. We had a cash balance of $890,000, which is fairly good. It had been descending, and since that report that's submitted here in writing to you, it's actually gone back up a little bit to about $910,000. So subject to your questions, that would conclude my presentation.
Mitch, can you refresh our memory what services we required you to contract with ODOT for?
It was all of our administrative services, so leasing, contracts, our budget, anything that's administrative in nature. So it offsets the loss of those five people. So taking us from 17 down to 11, there's some efficiencies in having some of those functions done by ODOT now.
Have you run into any challenges because of the change in relationship? And I understand that you were doing a lot of it prior to the actual decision that was made during last session. Communication going well, and the reason I'm asking is because I'm thinking along the lines of, is this a model that we want to pursue elsewhere? Are there other small agencies, commissions, whatever, that, you know, maybe they can't afford the full enchilada and contracting with ODOT or DAS or one of the larger agencies?
Chair Huffman, members of the committee, I would say that the biggest challenge has been really administrative in nature. I think there may be some efficiencies. I couldn't speak to every state agency. The biggest challenge for us has been going from SFMA to ODOT's teams, having the computer software and hardware that could handle that. So one of our transitions was to make sure we had sufficient IT capability to make that function happen. That actually caused us just a little bit of delay. And then transferring from SFMA to Teams, which is ODOT's budget management process, there was a lot of hand-to-hand scribing to make sure that we got equivalent organizational structure.
Okay, Senator Johnson.
If you would indulge a little trip down memory lane, everybody on this committee knows, and for the people that are listening to this, I used to run that agency, and we were under ODOT's boot heel at the time. And I think what has made this successful is the willingness of the administration at ODOT to be helpful and the leadership at Aeronautics to seek the appropriate help. There was a time when I ran the agency that ODOT was actually able to get into Aeronautics' checkbook without my knowledge and make withdrawals. And the point that I'm trying to make here is that if we are going to amalgamate some of these smaller agencies, and I don't think that's a bad idea, the rules of the road need to get established early. It was impossible to manage agency cash flow when I had third parties dipping into our cash accounts and taking withdrawals with no particular order to the timing. And so I think that I would like to commend this particular partnership driven by action out of this committee and the legislature as a whole. But this may be somewhat unique that the reintegration has occurred as seamlessly as it has, and I would urge great caution before we start pushing small entities together until we understand what are the terms and conditions of engagement.
Very good point. And that was along the line, and again, more the model that we did here where they can remain independent, but some of the services, maybe there could be an economy of scale?
I would just share again anecdotally, and I'm sorry I'm dwelling so much in the past, but I can recall a large teaching hospital in Portland that had a separate foundation for the large teaching hospital's activities and a separate foundation for their children's hospital. And they ended up merging back rooms and consolidating those functions of donor recognition, donor solicitation, but never lost the brand of the two institutions. And the back rooms over time became seamless. There was quite a lot of controversy about that melding of the back room. But ultimately, that turned out to inure for the benefit of both institutions without sacrificing a almost 100-year-old brand on behalf of the Children's Hospital.
Other questions or comments from Director Schwecker? Don't see it. Ms. Brickman, any additional comments?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Tamara Brickman with Budget and Management, and recommend that you acknowledge receipt of the report.
All right. May I?
You may.
Mr. Chair, move the...
Before you do that...
But wait.
A part of my recommendation is that we allow the... Because the agency has made significant strides in taking management actions on their... on the budget note and getting their shop in order, so to speak, and that there won't be significant data, more data to report in the next quarter. Part of my recommendation is to delay the next quarter's report until the fall and then have one final one when they bring their budget in 2013 so that you're not getting redundant information over and over again. So now you can make motion.
Mr. Chair, I move that the subcommittee recommend to the full Ways and Means Committee that we acknowledge receipt of the report and direct the agency to provide the next report to the emergency board at the closest meeting to September and a final report during the 2013 session.
Okay. Co-Chair Reed has recommended that the committee accept or acknowledge receipt of the report and direct the agency to provide the next report to the e-board at the closest meeting to September 2012. And the final report during the 2013 legislative session. Any comments, questions about that? Any opposition? So be it.
I'll need a carrier for full.
Carrier for full. Senator Johnson,
it gives
me
a chance to make the ubiquitous declaration of potential conflict, and I just can't resist that.
Which you would have to do anyway, probably, right?
Yeah, I'd be happy to do it. Thank you.
All righty. Thank you. Appreciate the report. I see nothing else on the agenda. Anything else for the good of the order? Actually, first let me close the work session on the Oregon Department of Aviation quarterly operations report. And now, anything else for the good of the order? Going once, twice, seeing nothing, we're adjourned. Thank you. Thank you.